So much of what we see in our favorite films is an illusion, and among the arts that make the movie worlds we love, the large-scale painted backdrops that allowed filmmakers to extend their Hollywood sound stages to just about anywhere are among the most difficult artwork to preserve. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guest today is Karen Manis, Scenic Art Supervisor at Texas Performing Arts and co-author of the book The Art of the Hollywood Backdrop. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us by phone from Austin, where I should note you're also a lecturer at the University of Texas's Department of Theater and Dance. If you will, just sort of set the stage for us, I guess metaphor included. What are backdrops for people that may not be familiar with that term, but I think all listeners have seen examples of backdrops in favorite movies?
Yes. Backdrops, foundationally, are monumental pieces of canvas or fabric that have been stretched across paint frames that are then drawn and painted to create complete illusions, from entire landscapes that might surround a soundstage to a city skyline to a hallway that might extend a physically built set out a window or down a corridor. There may be an illusion of a painting that is that extension on the set, but it's entirely painted by scenic artists who are experts in creating that illusion due to their understanding of perspective and their deep understanding of painting.
And I guess they have to know quite a bit about filmmaking too.
Everything in regards to the success of the backdrop is having that point of view or the perspective or vanishing point, if you will, is at the eye of the camera. And so everything is about that. The one-eyed monster, right?
Right.
The camera that sees everything.
And I think the most iconic ones are ones that wrapped an entire soundstage, the whole back of a scene that obviously made them enormous. I was thinking back, flipping through your book and seeing some of my favorite backdrops represented in your book. But I was thinking back even earlier to the silent period when cameras were fairly static and just sat and shot a scene in front of them. Oftentimes the backdrops were used in the 1890s and early 1900s just to give more to the scene without having to build a full set. Is that the earliest they were used? And did that tradition come out of theater and opera, I presume?
It came out of theater and opera and that tradition. And one of the most iconic scenic artist and one of the most important art directors contributing to early filmmaking is Ben Carré. And we talk about him in our book, a chapter on him creating these convincing illusions. And his training as a scenic artist came from a very young age in Paris, working in the opera houses at the Amable Studios as well, learning this tradition, but is absolutely born from theater. And using this art of deception, making the scenes real, if you will, quote-unquote real, and creating illusions of waterfalls and using cinematic tricks, whether it be just a painted backdrop or a play of light from behind the backdrop or a glass shot or cutouts of other painted imagery in front of that backdrop to create whatever story was trying to be told.
It's really fascinating when these things really work with a film, backing up the process beyond the technical artistry of just painting something that large to make it look convincing. I'm imagining these artists had to work closely with the production designers and art directors and directors and even the cinematographers, because you would have to have some pre-knowledge about how the set was going to be lit, how the other, the three-dimensional set objects would be placed, and even the camera placement to get the perspective correct. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, all of that would be deeply integrated. And in addition, another way that the scenic artist had been communicating back within this whole line of artists and filmmakers, they would create painted sketches of every backdrop before the actual painting was made. So there's this wonderful collection and archive of these small painted sketches from almost the entire collection of the MGM backdrops, now in the holdings of the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences core collection. So these small paintings, even going back from, I found one from Forbidden Planet, And that was my first moment of actually seeing what the real color was on that famous, famous
yes.
green, eerie sky. And it was so exciting to be able to come across this painting and see that rich color that would have been set by the colorists at MGM. So it's exciting to be able to compare that to the film stills and what has been left in archives and in history.
And Forbidden Planet, of course, was a very famous 50s science fiction film, and that's one of the ways that backdrops could be used is to create alien worlds or places that never existed or very exotic places. But I also love the use of backdrops for things that just kind of disappear, when, like in Westerns, or they extend the landscape, or in urban set films where you're looking out a window and you see a cityscape, but it's not a real cityscape, it's a painting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have favorites you've come across?
Oh, so many.
I'm sure, every so one, right? Whatever the last one you saw.
From, I'm thinking Western specifically, within that MGM catalog, of course, there were just Western scenes from Sea of Grass, these gorgeous paintings that would have been completely unnoticed. Let's say outside windows. When you spoke of Westerns, I immediately leapt to a recent story I heard about a series of backdrops that were just painted to support the recent film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
where a series of backdrops were painted in the style of the old Hollywood backdrops by the current generation of Hollywood scenic artists, referring back to these Westerns. And it's fun that these paintings are still being created for motion pictures. But in terms of my favorite iconic backdrops that I came across from this research, of course, would be the Mount Rushmore backdrop.
That's at the top of my list, too.
My favorite. How could it not be? And, of course, all the worlds that were created in The Wizard of Oz. And one of my deep personal favorites is the whole series of paintings that were created for the 2004 Lemony Snicket's A Series of Unfortunate Events. They were huge, some of them as wide as 360 feet, designed to wrap entire sound stages and really set the world and that hand-built, otherworldly feeling that was designed by Rick Heinrichs for that project.
And of course, sort of a modern rare example of the use of backdrops, since we've kind of moved away from that, is when they are used now, is it generally to evoke a different aesthetic than computer generated? You know, we've all become so used to these almost photorealistic backgrounds that are green screened into films now or created for sci-fi epics and Marvel films. But when a director goes to backdrops like the Lemony Snicket, or I'm thinking of the Coen Brothers film Hail Caesar, or the Tarantino reference you just made, it's for very specific aesthetic reasons or historically accurate reasons.
They primarily are being used to kind of reflect back onto another time, but they are still being painted for films. I mean, there were some more recent backdrops painted for the clock inside the walls.
That's it. Yep, the Eli Roth film.
And there were paintings in that film, and even the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Sure.
The next Netflix series, I believe. I hope I have that right.
Yeah.
But oftentimes it is for looking back. And what I think is so fascinating with what's happening in contemporary filmmaking now is when directors often love to shoot in camera. And that was one of the most valuable parts of working with a painted backdrop, is what you shoot, you see. So it's not this green screen where you're unsure of exactly the world that's been built around our characters. And I think it's so fascinating seeing what's happening in the evolution of technology and film that's starting to move away from the green screen and back to shooting in camera, with what's happening with, for example, The Mandalorian.
Right. I was thinking of that.
These
wraparound
panoramic backgrounds that are being created digitally. And part of me as a painter and as a scenic artist, but also somebody who loves the creation of other worlds finds this evolution kind of exhilarating. I know it's outside of the work of a scenic artist, but it's still very much in this world of storytelling and experience making. And as an artist, scenic artist, it's something I love. But it's fascinating to see this evolution, having shifted from hand-painted backdrops being then replaced and supplanted by digitally created imagery through green screens, to now being supplanted again, right? And
by giant LED screens,
right? Like, and like suddenly, where does the green screen go?
Giant television that wrapped around us.
Right.
And I'm sure it helps the actors, too, who are
sure.
working in front of an actual environment and not just mm-hmm. a giant green screen. But I wanted to touch on the preservation work, because without some of the work that you and many others have been doing, we would have lost, I imagine, most of these because of their scale. This must present some special challenges that a lot of archivists don't have. How does one go about preserving and safeguarding pieces of art this large?
Very good question. So I'm sure what has led to part of this question was the recent backdrop recovery project that the Art Directors Guild has led in partnership with JC Backings, which is one of the most important backdrop companies and also one of the most important owners of a vast collection of hand-painted backdrops. They've recently released 207 backdrops from their inventory to the Art Directors Guild archives, who took custody of them in enough time to photograph them deeply, archive, at least record them, get the metadata on all the backdrops, attribute them to the films where possible, attribute the scenic artists where possible, and now have rehomed these backdrops to... First, the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts, and Sciences, of course. Mm-hmm. They have the cream of the crop, including the huge Forbidden Planet backdrop, including the vaudeville oleo curtain from Singing in the Rain that appeared in this recovery project. So they have some beautiful examples, and other ones have gone off into the world, including to UT Austin, where I am. We now have 50 backdrops from MGM.
Wow.
And some of which are, a couple of which are very damaged. And that has definitely led me to the question of how do I restore them? Do I restore them? And unfortunately, since I'm a person who is also training the next generation to do this kind of painting work for theater and opera and themed attraction and television and film when needed, I am considering, daunted, I'm a bit daunted, but I am also considering cutting off some sections of these historic backdrops and doing exactly what the scenic artists before me did.
Touch them up.
Repaint those sections. Mm-hmm. Right. So the generation of scenic artists in the 1970s who are the very best, who are still working in Hollywood now, the lucky last, who have this lineage back to those golden age of painting masters and that knowledge transferred from generation to generation, those lucky last painters really cut their teeth and really learned from these MGM legends, not by painting at their sides, because many of them had already passed, but by repainting their masterwork paintings. J.C. Backings, they had this incredible inventory, and the only reason why the Backings have remained available and even accessible is they were working backdrops. They were not kept for any historic reasons. They were kept to rent out, and
so
they were of value only for that reason. And so these artists, when a backdrop was super popular, would rent out over and over and over, and they would get destroyed out in the field. So these scenic artists at times had to cut half of the backdrop off and sew a new piece of fabric on and figure out how to match it, or repaint the entire painting and replicate it exactly. So when we received these backdrops at UT Austin, Mike Dennering, who was one of the incredible scenic artists at Warner Brothers, he shared with me, he said, Karen, everything you need to know about painting is in those backdrops that you have. Everything you need to teach the next generation is right there. And so with that, I feel like I've been given permission to do just what those artists did.
That's fantastic.
If I need to rip off a section and sew on a section and teach my students with the best knowledge that I have how to recreate that look and repair those drops, I feel like I am empowered to do so. When we received backdrops, we had no obligation to restore them or even preserve them other than keep them dry. But they were brought in to be teaching assets and to really continue to work. And it's really exciting to me as an educator and as a scenic artist to be at my age and time in my life where I have new mentors and new masters teaching me, and my students will have that opportunity. And it's been extraordinary to see what's happened with my students' work since this research of these backdrops began. It's transformed how I see, and it's transformed how they see now in terms of color and texture and temperature. And I could go on. So.
Well, it's all extremely exciting just hearing about it. And I look forward to learning more about what these various archives are preserving. And I'm very happy to hear that some of these amazing and amazingly large backdrops from almost a century of Hollywood films are being preserved. So thank you for your efforts and thank you for talking with me today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I've been discussing the art and preservation of some of the largest objects from Hollywood's past, the enormous painted backdrops that once added grandeur and scope to many stage-bound film productions. My guest has been Karen Maness, scenic art supervisor at Texas Performing Arts and co-author of the book, The Art of the Hollywood Backdrop. You can pre-order her beautifully illustrated book online. For more of my conversation with Karen Maness, log on to ktep.org. On Film's engineer is Victoria Almaguer. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.